Right, 808 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Monday. Glad to have you here. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig, Dr. Bill Kane with traffic. Kelly will be back with us soon. A couple items up to throw up here to discuss, and you got something you would add to the mix. 343-0106, 343-0106, number one in the international news. As I mentioned, you happen to be listening to the mother of all morning shows, the likes of which few have ever listened to before. It's like kind of my riff, my takeoff of the president's tweet this morning. As now, that's not the last word. So it started off, if I get this correct. So you have Mike Pompeo, and Mike Pompeo is speaking at the Reagan Library yesterday. And Pompeo says America should know that peace with Iran. Wait, I'm sorry. Pompeo said he compared the Iranians with the mafia. Had a couple of other unflattering things. He said he declared U.S. support for the people of Iran, especially protesters who were taken to the streets recently in opposition to the current regime. Remember when that happened back during the Green Revolution and they ended up losing that one? Mm-hmm. That they tried that before? Well, Pompeo says they have our support and called Iran's leaders, compared them to the mafia. So then you have a message come out from Rouhani, President Rouhani there in Iran, who said America should know that peace with Iran is the mother of all peace and war with Iran is the mother of all wars. Why is it that everybody's talking like it's Game of Thrones or something like that? But that's the response from Rouhani. Then President Trump this morning says to Iranian President Rouhani, never ever threaten the United States again, or you will suffer consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious. Okay. Then you said, now we get a response back from the Iranians.
Yeah, their state-owned news agency, IRNA, which...
They're missing it. They switched two just, words, and they can have an acronym that would be Iran.
But they dismissed the president's tweet, they said, and they described it as a passive reaction to Rouhani's remarks that you just mentioned, Sean, about never threatening about the mother of all peace or the mother of all wars, whichever way you want to go. So they called it a passive reaction, and I can't help but think about what was the reaction. What's the reaction of the people who've been studying Iran and their relations with the United States just for decades and decades, and they have a feeling that they know what the best reaction to something that Iran says, and then the president is just tweeting. He's just doing what the president does.
Yes.
I'd like to know what some of the people who've been studying Iran for years, what they think of the president's tweets overnight.
Yeah, it sounds like a whole bunch of saber rattling, you know, that's going on. Lord knows that's something I don't think Americans, we want any part of. Another engagement there, especially with the Iranians and the people they would bring in. Of course, the Russians, they're somewhat allies. And yeah, I think right now it's just a war of words. Let's hope that's the way it goes going forward.
One Iranian newspaper actually quoted Rouhani as saying, Mr. Trump, do not play with the lion's tail.
Oh, yeah, I saw that too. The lion's tail. Like, once again, back to, is this like game? Who? I guess in Iran, they still talk like that.
They must. It reminds me of the North Korean talks and tweets that we've seen. Also, a Iranian political analyst, Seed Lalaz, said, in his opinion, these tweets are the storm before the calm. So he thinks that exactly what you said. He thinks there's a lot of saber rattling going on, but that actually they'll come to some kind of agreement.
I love that. The storm before the calm.
Right.
Who is the guy who wrote that?
It says he's a prominent Iranian political analyst. His name is Seed Lalaz.
Does he live in Iran? Does it say in Iran?
Well, he's talking with the AP, and they do not say whether he's from Iran, just that he's a prominent Iranian political
analyst.
Right.
I'm just wondering if he can have that liberty to say that probably outside the borders, just a guess.
Yeah, but I wouldn't think he'd be saying that from inside of Iran.
Isn't that weird? Isn't that weird to think about when people forget that it's not all the same all over the globe, that there would be places you could say things like that and we get re-educated for just saying that.
Yeah, so he would be in trouble, I'm sure, if the Iranians did not say, hey, we need you to go ahead and talk about this or post this, then they're not allowed to say it in Iran. And also somebody else commenting on this, somebody prominent with Iranian relations, and that's Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He praised the president's tweets. He said he praised the president's strong stance after years in which the Iranian regime was, quote, pampered by world powers.
There you go. Get comment on that. Also here locally, I don't know that anything came of this. I saw the news story, and I couldn't really, wrap my mind around whether they are going to do it as a play or something. Did you see the story about the Rock of Faith Missionary Baptist Church that hosted what they said was a reenactment of the arrest of Shakisha Clemons?
No.
Okay, so over the weekend, this comes out, Rock of Faith Missionary Baptist Church said they were hosting a reenactment at their facilities on South Ann Street at 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Church said a reenactment of Shakisha Clemons' shocking arrest will be performed, followed by some words of faith, healing, and justice. The public is invited. Said that the event is a client. It says, please do not come early unless you intend to join regular church service. So it goes on to say the event is a collaboration between Faith Plus Work, Alabama Coalition for Immigrant Justice, the We Matter 8 Mile Community Association, and the Mobile County NAACP Unit Number 5044. So I don't know anything more about that. I just saw that show up over the weekend. I don't. Does anybody have any more information? Did anybody go to the reenactment? It seems like the strangest thing for a church to do.
Yeah, it's really odd. And I guess the reason for the timing, because today Clemons is supposed to make an appearance at Saralam Municipal Court on charges related to that Waffle House arrest. So that would at least explain the timing of why they would do the reenactment now. But as far as actually why they're doing the reenactment, that's strange.
Really, if we can get like some cell phone video or something like that, was it like a play? I mean, I'm not asking this rhetorically. I'm interested to know how you would do that. When I go to church, the only play or reenactment I'm used to seeing is when we see the Christmas pageant, right? And I know that these kids are going to be farm animals. The lucky kids would get to be Joseph and Mary and baby Jesus.
Uh-huh.
And, maybe the wise men, pretty good, because you get the fancy, get the fancy garb and the staff.
Yes.
When you're a kid and get to be one of the wise. Like, I get that in church. I just don't know what the rest of it is all about.
Yeah, the organizer, Damian Marks, he's with Faith Plus Works. He said this would open dialogue. That was in his words, that this reenactment would reopen the dialogue and clear up misconceptions about the arrest.
Okay. Well, so, yeah, I'm an inquisitive guy. If you have cell phone video or something that can show me how that went down, I would be interested in seeing that. So let me know if you got that, and we'll do this. We'll run to the news break here. We're coming right back. Take your phone calls at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also on the list here, see this, I talked about a little bit last hour, and maybe nobody cares, but this was a big deal Friday in the guilty verdict against not only the person who's turned state's evidence, former state rep Oliver Robinson, but Balch and Bingham Law Firm. Y'all know that's like, Balch and Bingham Law Firm is gigantic in our state, and Drummond Coal Company, gigantic in our state. And they had members found guilty on Friday. We'll talk more about that when we get back. All right, 821 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings, phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, the text line in Chester. I'm with you. I mean, Chester, talking about the puppet shows they might have had at church. We had some puppet show. You know what we had? The felt board. Did you have that in Sunday school? No, you're too young. Y'all probably had to. Back in the old days.
We were all digital.
Back in the wagon wheel days of the 1980s, we'd have these felt figures for Bible study. Put the little figures up. But that was, and maybe sometimes we would take the animals and stuff and make them attack each other. And that's why we ended up sitting in the hallway.
Yes.
and said, if you cannot behave through the rest of Sunday school, you can sit out there till your parents come get you. That may or may not have happened to me.
Earlier, you were talking about the Christmas play that every single church puts on.
Christmas pageant, yeah.
And I remember being in that. And auditioning, and I know my mom, she at least was in charge of the program at least two of the years that I participated.
Right.
I think we did a little different version where it was like a mom and a dad was telling a bedtime story to a couple of the kids, and then there were flashbacks.
What kind of hipster church were you going to?
But I didn't get any of the roles, any of the main roles for, Jesus being born. I wasn't even a manger animal. One of the animals.
Not even I made manger animal cut. I made that cut.
I did not. No, I ended up.
I never got a lead. I never got anything. I was always in the manger. I was one of the critters.
And I was never in good enough shape to play Jesus, unfortunately, because that would always go to whoever was the most fit person.
Well, we'd always have whoever's little brother or sister had been born. They were always the.
But I ended up not getting any of the main roles. I know
it's
when
tough,
I was in.
Man,
it's tough out there. I could have redone my audition.
You didn't make Manger Animal?
No, I did not make Manger
You're
Animal.
You're like a talented guy, and you didn't make Manger Animal?
No, but I know we did have a musical one time. I got to sing in that a few. And I was definitely soprano back then. They had me playing the really high parts.
Right, and the mothers all love that when their sons were singing, you know, when we're young. And they're like, what happened to your pretty voice? Oh, well, Mom, I don't know. Look at the books. It tells you what happens to them. Also, you were mentioning during the news break how it's been, and see how it's impacted you, the discussion of the dead in that duck boat sinking there in Table Rock Lake near Branson. And because you were just on one of those duck boats. I don't know if it's that one in particular, or do they have a fleet of them?
Well, yeah, I guess the company actually, this company, it's Ride the Ducks, and I think they were bought by Ripley Entertainment, which they, just like Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and a few Ripley's, other cities, Ripley's big in Branson, because they have a Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Oh, we've been there.
And yeah, there were two separate locations there in Branson to board a Ride the Ducks boat tour. Okay. I remember that, because we went to the wrong one initially, when we were trying to go get on our, I had 12 family members with me, and we did this Ride the Ducks tour.
The same thing we're talking about here. Y'all just did that in June.
We did, but we were on a different part of Table Rock Lake. Okay. But this one, I guess the company, they have all 24 of these duck boats, and Ripley Entertainment bought this. Well, Fox News put out a story over the weekend where Ripley Entertainment paid this one man to inspect the duck boats. This guy says he served in the U.S. Army for 6 years as a diesel mechanic, and his name is Stephen Paul. He's a mechanical inspector. He said he warned the company that they had massive design flaws and dangerous safety issues, and this was just about a year ago that they hired him to inspect these boats. He said he took about 20 pictures of each of the 24 duck boats. He said his first thought when he heard the news over the weekend was that he was thankful that he and his family weren't on the ducks. His second thought was, oh man, I probably inspected that boat. He said that he put a 2-3-page fleet inspection report out, as well as 24 checklist reports, as many as 20 photos for each duck, and he inspected them last August. He cautioned that the boat's engines and pumps that remove water from their hulls might fail in bad weather, and that in rough conditions, water could get into the exhaust system and then into the motor, which would cut the motor off. And of course, at that point, because the motor is in charge of removing the water from the hull, then the duck boat is a boat no longer.
Right. So this is the bilge pump, right? So, just like a regular boat, right? Water gets in, the bilge pump pumps it out.
And he was saying once that starts sinking, you cannot get out from under that canopy, which is one thing that I've been thinking about a lot, because I was just on this exact same boat, and I would have thought.
How big? Okay, so because you have this firsthand experience with the particular duck boats we're talking about there in Branson, you were on it. How far from, like, where your shoulder, where the window is, from the bottom of the window to the top of the window. Just, I'm not asking for an exact, I know you didn't have a tape measure with you, but could you have a person climbed out through there?
I would think so, because it was about 4 or 5 feet, maybe, between, from the top of the canopy down. And they,
that's a big way.
These weren't like windows. It was wide open. And if there was rain coming in, or we drove past some sprinklers at the College of the Ozarks, they took us through that on the tour. And they were actually able to, kind of like on a camper, when you roll the canopy out for shade.
Yeah,
that's what this was like on the sides of the boat. But if I remember correctly, on the back of the boat, there wasn't anything. You could still leave on the back of the boat, like you're leaving out of the back of a school bus. But I would have thought, no matter what, I would be able to get out from under that canopy. It appears that that's not true. And
in this case,
some of the people we've talked with, I guess the pressure in there, once you start going underwater, it just becomes difficult to get out of the canopy.
Well, but once you go under, you have to get out before, because once you go under, it's that, I think I was trying to describe it last week. If you take your hand, if you're swimming, right? If you're out swimming, if you're sitting there and swimming down a Dolphin Island or whatever, or in your pool, and you take your hand and you force your hand down quickly from the surface of the water, that pressure that's there, that's what they would deal with, is that's going under, the pressure of the water trying to fill the void of the air in the duck.
But what's more alarming, it appears that none of the 17 victims were wearing life jackets once their bodies were discovered.
Unbelievable.
And a woman who they've been interviewing, who lost, 9 members of her family were on this trip, and she lost her 2 children and her husband. I think that was her entire...
I heard her talking this morning. I can't imagine how she can even speak.
She said before the ride, and it was just like this on my ride, that they did the whole safety speech. They said, we have plenty of life jackets for everyone. Okay, on this side. These are the adult-sized life jackets. Mm-hmm. Over there are for the littlest children, and these are for the medium-sized children. But she said the captain on this boat, and the captain survived. The person that was driving the duck boat did not survive. But she said the captain said, here's your life jackets. You're probably not going to need them. And she said that once the weather got bad, they never said once to put on your life jackets.
Wow. There's going to be a lot of, and they got a black box to they're going to, when they raise, they said today, raising that duck boat, they'll get the black box, and it'll probably indicate, I guess it'll have the audio from inside. I don't know what's on a duck boat black box.
And it sounds like there were some stories of heroism, because it sank right next to this big showboat. It's a big paddle wheel boat that I rode on while I was in Branson. It's called the Branson Bell, and they do, two or three shows a day. Right. But this Branson Bell was at its dock, and I think it's right around the same place where these duck boats were going to get out of the water. There were people that were aboard this showboat, the Branson Bell, and I think one is a sheriff's deputy who was there on vacation, and they leapt to action. They jumped off of this Branson Bell showboat. There were people throwing life jackets from the showboat into the water to try to save people that were in that duck boat. And that's where, if you've seen video of this duck boat going underwater, people were on this other showboat that was on.
They're right there witnessing it.
Yeah, and when I went on the duck boat trip, it was great weather in Branson.
Right.
I mean, not a wave in the entire lake.
Right.
But when I was on the Branson Bell, just within that same little time frame, there was an awful storm that came through while we were on this big showboat. Now, it's a massive boat, so we didn't have to worry about the bad weather. But I can picture exactly what happened with this duck boat out there on Table Rock Lake. And once that storm moves through, man, the waves just, they became way too much for these duck boats to bear.
And we'll talk more about that coming up. And also locally, tragedy on the water, a wreck yesterday killing two. And if you looked at this, you looked at the front end of this, looks like about an 18-foot welded aluminum boat that state troopers say 39-year-old Stephen Angle was driving. They also say he was driving drunk. That boat hits one of the pylons, the cement, the concrete supports for the bayway. Kills two, injures another. But one of the questions is, $1,000 bond gets this guy out. We'll talk about this more when we return right here on Mobile Mornings. At 8:35, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Sean, Dalton, Dr. Bill, Kane, and y'all at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, Blood Moon back in the news. Lunar eclipse time. We got that coming up at the end of the week, Friday and Saturday. The blood moon eclipse takes its name from the red hue the moon takes on. So it will last 4 to 5 hours. We'll talk to Dr. Bill more about that later on in the week, see if we'll be able to get a glimpse of it coming up going into the weekend.
That's supposed to be like the longest lunar eclipse of the century or something?
That's right. That's when everybody runs mad through the streets or something like that, right? Also on the list, I saw, thank you. People responding on Twitter this morning saying, surely this is a misprint and this idiot was not released on a $1,000 bond. They're referring to the story we mentioned there about the wreck, the fatal boating accident on the causeway. You have this state trooper saying 39-year-old Stephen Angle is driving. It looked, just from the pictures I've seen, it's like about an 18-foot welded aluminum boat, and it doesn't look much like a boat afterwards. The front end, I'm not talking about dented, y'all. Y'all have to see the picture. I mean folded up. And the story goes here that the boat hit a piling for the bayway. Okay, it was. They said state troopers say the boat was traveling. And the story here from MyNBC 15 has it. Troopers say the boat was traveling westbound between the bayway lanes. Okay, so you can get in between. You can get in between the bayway span. If you don't go boating, you'll probably see us doing that as you're riding down the interstate. Right, we're going to go, especially between like Chocolata and going over towards where we would get into the Tensaw River, Spanish River in there, or that area. A lot of travel through there. There is a big detour because there's a sandbar there, but that area right there. The state troopers say the boat was traveling westbound between the bayway lanes when it hit one of the bayway pilings. They say further in the story, damage to the front end of the skiff was severe. Metal crumpled backwards into the hull of the boat. Several agencies responded to the scene, with an off-duty firefighter jumping into action, doing everything he could. Troopers say the angle that would be the driver did not know the passengers in his boat, and he is not sure why he picked them all up. Now, that's new. I have not seen that either, that he didn't know the passengers in his boat. Seems questionable because you have two dead, one injured, and two others that, I mean, all those people in his boat need to, where were they that they... I just wonder if there's more information on that that should be coming. But according to Baldwin County Jail, Angle, the driver here, Stephen Angle, 39-year-old, spent less than 5 hours in jail and bonded out on a $1,000 bond just before 10:30 last night. That's what the folks on Twitter were talking about. I'm with y'all. My reaction was the same. You got to be kidding me. $1,000 bond?
Now, would there have been more traffic than usual under the Bayway with boaters out there? Because, I mean, but with everything that's been going on over the weekend, would there have been more boat traffic? Well,
there's always going to be boat traffic. It's a Sunday, right? And people are going to be out. And that's a traveled area because you have the Chocolata launch access. So if you launch there, and Chocolata launch is the one that's just west of where the Bayway and the Causeway cross. It's that. It's the one that I celebrated so much the other day.
Yes.
When they finally got the pipe in the ground and all the equipment out there so we could start launching at all those launches again on the Causeway. Okay, so that launch, people leave. That's a very popular launch when it's up and running. It doesn't have machinery and pipes laying in it. Very popular launch because you can go through there, you can go east and go through the channel at the south end of Chocolata and get out to like the Apalachee River, or you can go west and you come out, and west is going to take you, you can come out and get yourself to the Tensaw Spanish River, and then from there go way up, you know, go all through the Delta. So I mean, it is a for sure traveled area, but it's also wide enough. I mean, there's pilings on either side, but it's not like you're threading a needle or anything. I mean, you can run I imagine, number one, boats pass all the time in there with plenty of room. You could have, it's, I don't know how wide, we can go look at it on like a Google Maps or something, but it's, I'm going to say, just my estimate, it's 50 yards wide, 60, wider than that, maybe 80 yards wide between the two. Maybe not, yeah, but, you know, 50 to 80 yards wide. It's
plenty of room.
It's plenty of room. It's not like, yeah, don't think of it like some narrow trail between the two. There's plenty of room. Now, most people are going to run, if there's not another boat coming, you're going to run in the middle because you want to make sure you stay where it's deeper. Some, you know, quite often it's shallower up by the pilings. But still, there's, yeah, I wouldn't believe there would be any traffic situation that would lead you to that. Maybe there is something, I don't know. But according to state troopers and Alabama Law Enforcement Agency, that it was a BUI, a boating under the influence. They're calling it that. That's what they're saying this morning. Which, by the way, I looked this up because somebody was asking, what does that mean in the state? What are the regulations on BUI? And so Alabama law prohibits operating or being in actual physical control of a vessel while under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Generally, the term vessel includes every description of watercraft other than a seaplane capable of being used as means of transportation on the water. Now, there's one that I don't... It should be motorized, okay? It should be motorized. Of course, I get argument from people, but there's many a canoe trip, I think, that, you know, when people are in canoes going down the Blackwater River or something, but it says, can't be under the influence of drugs, alcohol, or any other intoxicating substance to a degree which renders him or her incapable of safely operating the vessel. That's a fair standard to set. They said the blood alcohol concentration of 0.08% or greater. So you can be convicted based on actually being impaired by drugs or alcohol or having an excessive blood alcohol level. So the consequences of the Alabama BUI depend on the circumstances of the case, but generally a BUI is a Class A misdemeanor, and possible penalties, which are the same as those for an Alabama DUI, are first offense. BUI carries up to 1 year in jail and or a $600 to $2,100 fine. Convicted boaters typically face 90-day boating privilege suspension. Second offense, where a BUI offender has a prior BUI conviction that's occurred within 5 years of the current violation. The second offense carries 1 year in jail and up to $1,100 to $5,100 in fines. Judges must sentence second offenders to a minimum of 5 days in jail or at least 30 days of community service. Convicted boaters also face 1 year boating privilege suspension. Third offense, where a BUI offender has at least two prior BUI convictions, regardless of how long ago the priors occurred. The third offense carries 60 days to 1 year in jail, $2,100 to $10,100 in fines. Convicted boaters typically face a 3 year boating privilege suspension. If a BUI offender had a passenger under 14 years old or a blood alcohol content of 0.15 or 0.15% or greater, the judge must impose at least double the normal penalties for the offense. And then you get into the BUIs involving injuries or death. It says here, DUI offenders who cause accidents where someone suffers serious physical injury or is killed can face felony charges. Possible penalties for these types of DUI offenses are a DUI involving serious injury. DUI offender who causes serious physical injury to another can be convicted of, quote, assault in the first degree, a Class B felony. The offense generally carries 2 to 20 years in prison and up to $30,000 in fines. And a DUI involving death, the DUI offender who causes the death of another person can be convicted of, quote, criminally negligent homicide, end quote, a Class C felony. Offense carries 1 year and 1 day to 10 years in prison and up to $15,000 in fines. So those are some of the stats.
And I'm sure one of the discussions this week will be whether that bond that Stephen Engel paid to get out of jail last night, whether that wasn't a steep enough penalty. Because
that's what people were saying on Twitter. They're saying $1,000, you got to be giving me a break.
Yeah, especially because this is not the first time he's been in trouble. Our news partners at WKRG says that in 2002, Engel was arrested for DUI in Mobile County, and then again in 2005 on a charge of reckless endangerment. So by their count, this is at least the third time he's been in trouble with the law. And to bond out for just under $1,000 last night, and after being in charge of the boat, allegedly in charge of the boat, with deaths involved, I'm sure that'll be discussed a lot.
That's why those, you know, it comes in those penalties increasing with injury and death. But I wonder if they will say it's a second offense. I wonder if they split DUI and DUI in the state, because it says here under the DUI penalties, second offense is obviously bigger. If the previous one, it sounds like, was a DUI, if a DUI and then you have a DUI, I wonder if they're seen separately or seen as, you know, a continuation. You know, one is the other. I mean, you're driving, whether you're driving a boat or...
And if that's the case, then that's... And under the influence of anything, your charges should stack on top of each other. It shouldn't be a first offense if you've been caught with a DUI before.
We'll get your calls on that and text when we return at 343-0106. Coming right back. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings, which thank you very much again. Folks have voted in the nappies. Favorite morning show. Best morning show in the area. Thank you, thank you. Appreciate that. And always had a lot of fun with Rob and Ashley and the whole gang at the nappies. Dale, Jason, you know, kicking it. Jason was I didn't get to hang out with Jason Johnson as much as I wanted to, but it cracks me up.
So. Man, it was a great time on Friday night, and they had the picture booth set out out back, and I just have to let everyone know, you need to go to the Facebook, FM Talk 106.5 on Facebook, because we have some of the pictures from that night, but Corey LeBounty, who's with me on Saturday mornings for Prep Sports Report, and he comes by the station fairly often, but just so happened, and he did not plan this, but he was wearing a snazzy, very snazzy green jacket on Friday night. Just so happened that there was a green screen that the Lanyap were using to take pictures.
Yeah, like y'all know, like when they do, for like TV meteorologists, they'll stand up in front of the screen where you can see, oh, here comes the rain, or here's the front, or whatever they're walking for. That's a green screen you can project. Like if you're in the actual TV studio, it's just a green screen. When you look at the screen, it projects the image up there. That's why they'll never wear green, because you disappear.
You learn that in day one of meteorology school. You do not wear green when you're going to be on the camera. But Corey did not know that there would be a green screen there.
Nor did
he wore
I.
a green jacket, and we took advantage of the situation. And all
like
I can say is...
grown-ups will.
Just, yes. So if you go to facebook.com/FMTalk1065, you'll see what looks like Corey's disembodied head and Sean holding on to it. It's just one of the best pictures I've seen.
It's something I learned, I think, in my... freshman or sophomore year at the University of Alabama in TV production, like 101, the TCF 101, where they said, and this is a green screen, and if you wear green, so the next class, like it was like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, the next class we all wore green, and we're like, look, I'm disappearing.
It paid off.
Yeah, it was very good. I learned a skill set way back in 1990 that's paid off today. Another story we're following, and I'm going to keep following this one because I think it's so very important, and I got to tell you, it's really not gotten the attention down here in Southwest Alabama. And people, I understand. You could say, well, you know, Sean, That's a Birmingham story. Yeah, I think it's a little bigger than that, because you're talking about some of the biggest players in the state when you talk about Balch and Bingham Law Firm and Drummond Coal Company, and a former representative of the state of Alabama, Oliver Robinson. We've been talking about this for a year and change now. Heck, it was actually part of the discussion back toward the Senate special election when you had Roy Moore and Luther Strange. And I was pointing out back then that Luther Strange, his name was, you know, part of this investigation. Now, they didn't find Luther Strange guilty, but part of this investigation. And there were, you know, like people say, there's regular corruption, there's illegal corruption, and there's legal corruption. Mm-hmm. And you'll see in this story some different, lots of legal corruption, and then the feds made a case for illegal corruption. And I'm sorry, but I mean, it happens in our state. There's lots of stuff go, well, you remember when they came out with the special investigator Ellen Brooks?
Mm-hmm.
She talked about all the 100-and-something pages of indictment against former Governor Bentley, and she said, well, these are all bad things, but they're not illegal in the state. That's what I call legal corruption. Things that are not good, that
right.
we would not say are a good thing for somebody to be doing, but there's not a specific law. But the feds did find specific laws to find on six counts guilty. Number one, Joe Gilbert, partner for Balch Bingham Law Firm, and David Roberson, vice president of Drummond Coal Company. I mean, this is big. And of course, the person who pled guilty and worked with the investigators, former state rep Oliver Robinson, they were found guilty on six counts, including bribery, conspiracy, honest service wire fraud, which I don't know what that means.
It seems like
you couldn't get in trouble for honest service.
Right, because
honest service wire fraud seems oxymoronic.
With the name of it, yeah, honest services, but I'm guessing some kind of wire fraud.
And then also money laundering. Both of the men were accused of bribing Robinson to use his office to further their agenda. Let me kind of put it in Sullivanese here. So what they alleged was happening is Oliver Robinson, who is a rep for this northern area of Birmingham, state rep, he was given money through a couple different means, but into a fund he had that he had control of.
Mm-hmm.
They put the money in there to have him tell his constituents, y'all don't need to worry about this Superfund expansion. So there's a Superfund cleanup going on there with, I guess, aftermath of coal mining that's gone on in that area over time. And so the EPA is looking to expand that cleanup. So the allegation here, and what the jury found them guilty of, is they went to Oliver Robinson, whose district was that Superfund cleanup site was in, gave him money to go tell his constituents, y'all don't need to have further investigation here. You don't need to have, you don't need to call for more EPA. You don't need to go. Everything's fine. You know, just move along. Everything's good. And so it was just as simplistic. And sometimes I get frustrated in the state that they don't even get more complex than this. But the allegation here is these attorneys, and working with Balch and Bingham is the rep firm for Drummond Coal, they were giving money to Oliver Robinson to tell his people not to do anything. And also there was a letter writing campaign going on, which then Attorney General Luther Strange was cut and pasting letters that were created by Balch and Bingham to tell the EPA to stay out of it.
Man, then like you said,
there was no finding guilty of Luther Strange. But his part, I just want to point out that he was getting the letters from that same firm to kind of cut and paste and tell the EPA, hands off.
And even though there weren't a lot of big names, you know, directly, I guess, they weren't on the stand and they weren't awaiting to see if they were going to be charged, but a lot of big names were mentioned over the 3 weeks. They listened to 3 weeks of testimony, and then before they actually came out with their ruling, the jury deliberated for 12 hours after hearing this entire case and before they came out with their ruling. But they're saying the bribe was in the form of a lucrative consulting contract, paid Robinson $360,000 through his Oliver Robinson Foundation. That was over 2015 and 2016, $360,000, which, you know, when we talk about a lot of these corruption cases, $360,000 doesn't sound like a lot of money, but
it's, you say it was, I mean, a bargain deal?
Maybe so. I mean, you think...
But this is one case that just shows what may have happened or may be happening now in Alabama. You influence the representative of the area to do something that you would think would be contrary to their constituents, for the benefit of whoever, whatever party needs something. And that's why I point out that people say, well, that's a Birmingham story, y'all, but it's an Alabama story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, two big, big names.
Yes.
And then, like, that's before you mentioned the political names that were thrown in the mix with Luther Strange.
Yeah. So we will talk more about this and keep on this, because I just want to establish, when people say, well, they always talk about corruption in Montgomery, but I don't really hear the stories. Well, you know, when I go down the Hubbard, Bentley, this, and we can add to lists. This is, there's, heck, they've got another series of indictments they made. Ed Henry was called, remember, about a month and a half ago. I hadn't heard any more on that. We'll keep our eyes on that one, too. And we'll pick up the discussion again at noon today for Midday Mobile. Laura Ingraham Show on the way next. Y'all have a great one.